compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what's going to happen. Unpredictable conversations galore, that's for sure. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, you and I were talking during the break about Facebook going dark for 6 hours yesterday. I did not even know that until this morning when I looked at the headlines because, you know, I'm not really on Facebook much. Did you notice it? Were you panicked when Facebook went dark?
I learned about it this morning, when I was doing the news roundup. I'm like, oh, well, look at that. Facebook was dark and a multi-billionaire lost some chump change.
Oh, you're talking about one Mark Zuckerberg, I think, right?
The one, yes.
I'm looking at the article in Bloomberg this morning. Now, this affected a lot of people because Facebook. So there was a weird coincidence of sorts, right? Because there was a whistleblower that came out.
Yeah, kind of odd, don't you think?
It is.
All the times for Facebook to go dark, it's right after this giant whistleblower story.
It's a curious coincidence, isn't it? And the whistleblower was blowing whistles about stuff going on inside Facebook, I guess, putting profit over
safety.
Yeah.
Yep. And truth.
Among other things.
Among other things.
So you didn't even notice because you're heavy on TikTok, though, right?
No.
I like that note of the slight note of pleading in your voice.
Like,
no.
Please stop saying that. People are going to start believing it. Like, Dr. that's Cyrus loves his TikTok.
Cyrus TikTok Simcoe.
Nope.
So Mark Zuckerberg, he lost, according to Forbes this morning anyway, he lost $6 billion.
Whoa.
Woo. In 6 hours.
I've never lost $6 billion in 6 hours.
Not even once?
Nope. Have you?
No. Nope. No, never. So here's what they're saying. A sell-off sent the social media giant stock plummeting 4.9% on Monday, adding to a drop of about 15% since September. The stock slide on Monday sent Zuckerberg's net worth down. It plunged, Cyrus. It absolutely fell off a cliff down to $121.6 billion.
Oh, I hope he's okay.
I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I think he'll be able to pay his mortgage this month. He may have to hustle, but I think he can pay. He's going to earn that money back.
You're like, how does Mark Zuckerberg sleep at night? Well, he sleeps on a bed made out of money.
You know what? I'm trying to imagine. Now, the mathematicians among us could do this. $121.6 billion. So how much, if he had that at interest, let's say, for round figures, let's say he could get 10% on that money, he would probably make the $6 billion back very quickly, without even doing anything. It just, the money just replenishes, I would think.
Oh,
so
must be nice.
Here's what Bloomberg is saying. On September 13th, the Wall Street Journal began publishing a series of stories based on a cache of internal documents. By the way, some people say cache. It's not a cache. It's a cache. C-A-C-H-E. Revealing that Facebook knew about a wide range of problems with its products, such as Instagram's harm to teenage girls, mental health, and misinformation about the January 6th Capitol riots. While downplaying the issues in public, the reports have drawn the attention of government officials, and on Monday, the whistleblower revealed herself. In response, Facebook has emphasized that the issues facing its products, including political polarization, are complex and not caused by technology alone. I think it gives people comfort to assume that there must be a technological or a technical explanation for the issues of political polarization in the United States, according to Facebook's Vice President of Global Affairs. Does Relevant Radio have a Vice President of Global Affairs? I don't think we have that position yet, do we?
No, not yet.
We have to be global before we can have that position.
Well, we are global with the app. That's true. Emails from all over the world. So we are global, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I like it, too.
I like it. I like to look at it that way. Well, thank you, Cyrus, for that information. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Pittsburgh and talk to Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I just wanted to encourage that father of the rebellious daughter to hang in there and stand fast in his discipline, because he may be the only discipline she has in her life. She won't get it, apparently, from her mother. She will not get it in the schools that she goes to or anyone else. most adults in her life. And I went through this with my daughter. Her father left when she was 12. She rebelled against everything about me. Mm-hmm. Went to live with him. He and his wife encouraged her to just have fun, no judgment, come and go as you please. And she really went off the rails. And so she didn't want me in her life, but I stayed active in her school. I would go by where she worked in the evenings and bring food and just, you know, send her texts now and then. But I didn't sacrifice my own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so I still do. I still encourage her. She's turning a little bit. It's taken a very long time. I pray all the time for her, and that's all I can encourage this father to do is just stand by his principles and pray for her all the time and just assure her now and then that he does love her. She is still his daughter and always will be in his life.
Now, you're talking about your former husband. Is that right, Mary?
I'm sorry, my former.
Well, when I got lost there. So I was under the impression that you and your husband were divorced and your daughter was living with
him. Yes.
Okay. So then when you started saying that you want to encourage him, you're talking about the caller, right? Or the man that the caller was talking about.
Yes, the father of the teenage daughter. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I had custody of my daughter, but my former husband and his wife told her she could come and live with them and she'd have no rules. And so, of course, that's very attractive to a 17-year-old, and that's what she did. And that's when she went off the rails. But, as furious as I was at all of them, I still stayed in touch with her. I still
that's good.
Stayed in her life. And it's taken very long. She's almost 30. She's slowly turning, I think. But, you know, it's difficult. It's very difficult. But I believe that she will eventually come back to God. And that's what I really care for most of all.
Well, you know, you're a very devoted mom. You're a long-suffering and patient mother. Seeing all this unfold. So I hope and pray that it does, that she does come full circle. That would be great. You and she are still obviously in contact, right? Because you can visit with her and talk.
We are. Yes, I don't see her as often as I'd like, but her lifestyle, you know, and I've let her know I don't approve of her lifestyle, but I don't, you know, I still keep in touch with her and I still see her. And I've told you once her eternal life is very important to me as well as her life on this earth. And that's why I try to encourage her away from things that I know are, you know, in conflict with God.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I try to make things light too. We try, you know, when we do get together, we have a really nice time. But she's under a lot of negative influences, and that's what I'm trying to break through and trying to pray for.
Well, hopefully, and I wouldn't be at all surprised, your constancy, your good example, you're showing her love. Yes, you disagree with the things that she does in some cases, but you still love her, and she knows that. Even if she hasn't made her way all the way back, she still knows that, and I think that will count for an awful lot when the time comes. And when it really gets difficult for her, I hope it doesn't, but usually life is like that, and something really difficult happens, I have a feeling she's going to turn to you because she knows you're the real deal.
Possibly, yes. Yes, I hope so. I hope. I may not see this change, this conversion, until I'm long dead. I don't know, but I still, you know, we do have to be the one adult in their life who cares about them enough to discipline, to stick That's to right. our rules. And, you know,
that's right. Well, Mary, I wish you and your daughter well, and I hope that process is faster rather than slower. Thank you for that. And I'm sure the people listening right now who are in a similar situation appreciate your encouragement. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Tracy in Loveland, Colorado. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, good morning. Calling up, I just want to say I'm in a spiritual battle right now with some diabolical spirits. I'm not a Catholic, but I'm in the process of trying to confirm. I went out to visit my sister in Aiken, South Carolina, and went to Mass and just really did a lot of stuff. I visited with their priest, Father Wilson, out there in the Aiken Parish, I brought back a prayer book of deliverance. I've been reading those to cast out these dark spirits. And I brought back blessed holy water and salt, and just been going through my home at night. And So my
what's
wife
going on in your house?
Yesterday, I've been.
What are some of the signs that you're seeing in that regard?
Just my wife's behavior. You know, every dark thing the world offers, she's involved in.
Can you give an example?
That may be too extreme, but
you mean like tarot cards or fortune telling, stuff like that?
No, sir, not like that necessarily. Just sort of a hatred of the Catholic Church and not wanting our kids to be involved in it, not want me to be involved in it. She sent me a text yesterday saying if I continue to go to Mass, that she would not be my wife any longer. And so I
how long have you been married?
And we talked a little bit. We've been married now for about 5 years.
Okay.
And we've been together for 13. And we had attended Catholic church in the beginning of our relationship. Neither of us were Catholic. And unfortunately, we've gone up to receive communion wrongfully. I didn't understand all of the rules. And so we were denied communion, and that kind of turned my wife's heart to the Catholic Church. So yesterday she said that she was okay if I continue to go to Mass now, but if I try to ever bring the kids or anything like that, that she would leave me. And then it just kind of went a little bit, got worse from there. And so I know ultimately prayer is my ultimate weapon.
That's true. Are you seeing some sort of odd things happening in your home? I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on what it is that you see that you consider to be diabolical interference.
Well,
anything
just
in particular
that are normalized in society that aren't of God are very, you know, normalized in our home. You know,
okay.
Television shows, Facebook, word choices, you know, acceptance of homosexual, her sisters in a gay relationship, and so just trying to, you know, say that, you know, wants our kids to think this is normal and they should be able to love who they want to love, and
I understand. So it's more of an attitudinal issue in her as opposed to some activity. I was wondering if maybe that's what you meant, that there was some paranormal activity in the home. Well, fair enough.
I wouldn't say necessarily, but certainly a dark spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're right to get the holy water and the blessed salt. I would encourage you to bless your home with that, and it sounds like you're already doing that. If you want to invite a Catholic priest over to the house, you can have him come over and bless the house. Maybe invite him over for a cup of coffee, and he can bless the house and say prayers of deliverance. That would be a good thing to do. Do you have an image of Jesus in your home? Do you have a crucifix, perhaps, someplace where people who come into your home would see it and know that you're a follower of Jesus?
I don't have a crucifix. I do have a cross up on the high point of a bookcase in our entry room, and
that's
I have
good.
A cross over the kitchen window.
Your phone's starting to act up a little bit, Tracy. So here's a thought. If you have a Catholic bookstore near you, or it could be a Catholic church goods store near you, go in there and pick up a crucifix, something beautiful, and do this for two reasons. One would be for your own edification and that of anyone else who may come into your home. And the second reason is, see what your wife's reaction to that is. If there is, in fact, some diabolical presence or activity in your home, and maybe there isn't, but you know, it's possible that there is, people who have some oppression, and oppression can escalate all the way up to obsession and even possession. I'm not suggesting that your wife is possessed, not at all. But people who are in one form or another in the thrall of the devil, they tend to react very negatively to a crucifix as opposed to a cross. So that would be another thing. If you bring a crucifix into your home and you put it in a position of honor, that will tell you a lot, and your wife's reaction will tell you a lot. And that would be an indication about what else may be going on. I would encourage you to keep doing what you're doing in terms of pursuing the Catholic faith. Are you already enrolled in RCIA by now?
I was meeting, but I haven't started back up. I stopped it for a while.
Okay. Well, when the time is right, and hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later, you can resume the RCIA classes. And for those listening who don't know what that means, it stands for Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. And it's the process that one would go through typically, but not doesn't have to be this way, but often it is. So somebody who wants to come into the Catholic Church would go through those inquiry classes and eventually be formally received into the church. Now, what's going to happen, Tracy, when you get to that point is you'll be able to start receiving the sacraments, and that's going to give you a great deal of spiritual fortitude and all the other graces that you need to be courageous in your life, especially when you're dealing with a wife who doesn't see the world the way you do. It will help you in that regard. So I just want to encourage you to keep going down that road. Bring some images of Jesus and Mary into your home and see what happens. Start praying the rosary. Are you already praying the rosary yet?
No, I have not. Okay.
It's well, I mean, don't feel I'm
that's
not
something
trying
I'm
to
still I'm still coming to agreement with Mary you know, I've been praying, Lord, reveal her to me, if that's your will. My sister did give me the Jewish Mary book, and I did read that a while back, and that made sense. I need to refresh that and bring that back to my forefront.
Right. I've got some articles on Mary that are free. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and there you'll see links. Click on the link for articles, and I would get the article called Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine. Also, another article about Mary called Mary, Ark of the New Covenant, and that's a biblical look at Mary's role in God's plan of salvation. That may help as well. Well, hang in there, Tracy. I appreciate your phone call. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149.
Taco Town!
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Taco Town!
All right, we are back. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go to Elaine in Belvedere, Illinois. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes. How may I be of service?
Hi. I am calling because the lady who spoke about divorce earlier, and my life was quite a tragedy, most of it sinful. And I am that woman who did not have a husband, but had had multiple husbands. Okay. And my first marriage was being a week after I turned 18 in a non-denominational church with a Catholic priest co-officiating the marriage. And even if you look at my pictures of me walking down the aisle, you see this ghostly
girl
gaze. Yeah, I was waiting for my father to give me the out, as he had done my older sister and hadn't. I did not want to get married.
What do you, no, when you say that, you mean you were waiting for your dad to step in and say, sorry, I'm not going to let you get married?
Yes, or to tell me, if you don't want to do this, there's the door, let's go, because he had done it to my older sister, and I had been trying to build up the courage to back out of the wedding before the day of it.
Right.
And he never gave me that out. And you just see my face as I'm going up the aisle in the pictures, and it's I'm scared.
Were you baptized at that time? Had you been raised Catholic?
No.
Okay.
No. I was raised in a house that was more cussing, swearing, taking the Lord's name in vain, alcohol problems, everything. I did not attend church except for when I was very, very small. And,
but you were never
I was
baptized,
allowed to walk.
Right?
No.
Okay. So how did things go then? So you were, You wanted to be a runaway bride, but you couldn't. You didn't see an opportunity. You got married. So let's take it from there. What happened after that?
Okay. After that, some months into our wedding, my husband came home from work with no hair. And I said, kind of early, it's late, you know, fall and everything, you know, what's going on here? And he says, oh, I joined the Army today. Mm. And I said, well, sit down. I got news for you. I was pregnant. And, but that's the kind of person he was. He never discussed anything. Things were always his way. And that was why I didn't want to go through with it.
So what happened then? So you're pregnant. You're probably 19 by then, right? Or close to it. He's just up and joined the Army. So he's going to disappear for months on end.
Correct.
So what happened?
And we ended up out a couple states away from home. And, our marriage was not very good. And I hardly ever seen him, and things just...
So what happened?
I mean, we did not attend church or anything like that, and it just ended up deteriorating, and I finally said, this isn't working out. I've got to... I'm leaving, and you know, and I'm going to take the...
So press fast forward, just in the interest of time. Give me the big picture.
Sure. What happened? The big thing was is that I ended up filing for a divorce because I found out that he was... going to leave the state. So it ended up, we got divorced. He got remarried. He filed for an annulment so that he could get remarried. During that time, my life started spiraling. I ended up meeting a man. I ended up getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. We got married in a courthouse I was 7 months pregnant, just to give the baby his last name.
Right.
He ended up being quite an alcoholic abuser, as I found out after we got married, and used to beat me up all the time. Okay. And I finally got strong enough to leave that situation.
That's good.
He ended up filing for divorce to get remarried. Then I met my third husband. And my third husband, I said, you know, as long as you don't ever beat me up or treat me like he did, things will probably work out okay. Well, he, in 3 years, got into drugs and started hitting me. And I said, I can't do this. I already told you this wasn't going to be a part of my life. And so we left. And he filed for a divorce so that he could get remarried.
All right.
And I gave up men. I swore off men at that point. And I said, you know, my dad always said, you always pick the ugly dog, or, you know, the ugly puppy type thing. And then I met my current husband. And introduced to him by a friend, and we became friends. We had met a year later. We met for the second time.
Elaine, this is interesting, but we're going to run out of time. So give me the cash value, if you would, please.
The thing is my current husband was outside of the church. I actually, after dating about 3 years, got him to start going back to church. Then I started to go to his church. I wanted to become a member of this church, and the priest said, see me after Mass. Mm-hmm. So we go to the priest's office, and he said, well, where were you baptized? And I said, well, I've never been baptized. Mm-hmm. So he said, well, we got to take care of that. So I did RCIA, became baptized in the Catholic Church.
Good.
And then after that, my husband proposed to me, and then the problem started because of these prior marriages. Through the Diocese of Chicago, who we had to go through, they said, first of all, you had all those stipulations and everything before those marriages. So those are not valid marriages because you were already planning it out.
Right. So tell me, what is I know you have a question for me. What is that question?
Well, my question was, because we did get married in the Catholic Church, I was approved and everything. I often wonder, do I still, you know, cause I have children. So do I say, I've been married 4 times, or do I say I've only been married once? Because
here's what you can say.
All annulled in the church.
Right. Here's what you can say. Well, the church doesn't have the power to annul a valid marriage. The church can simply declare null a marriage that maybe all the parties involved thought was a valid marriage, but it turns out later was not a valid marriage. So we just want to make sure we understand the meaning of the terms here. An annulment doesn't mean that the church can annul a valid marriage. It can't. But you are in the clear, and you're able to get married to this man. You said that you did get married to this fourth gentleman, And that's good. And the fact that you got baptized after all of this is a magnificent upside to the whole thing, because had you been baptized as an infant, all of the ups and downs and everything that went on, you know, in terms of sin, that would all have been on your soul, and that would have been a big mess to clean up. But baptism wiped all that out. I'm sure you know that, right? I did not know that at first.
It was the priest that we were talking to for the wedding that explained it, and I had forgotten it until many years later.
Right.
And then listening to her, I'm like, but this is what I was just told, and I kind of remembered that part again.
Yeah, so your baptism, I mean, that's something to thank God for. Not that we don't advocate that people delay baptism, but in your case, it just worked out that way. So everything that happened in your life by way of sin before that baptism is entirely gone, and all the effects of those sins entirely gone, and you are a pristine, brand new, beautiful soul at that moment. Now, everything that happens after that, of course, that's where confession comes in. But here's the thing. From everything you've told me, you were free and clear to marry this man. Now, the two of you, I guess, got married in the Catholic Church. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So this is all good. So where is the wrinkle, or what is the question, or what is... I remember now.
Well,
you asked me about your kids or how you talk about your previous marriages. That's right.
What?
I would simply say that you were married civilly before, and if you want to say how many times, that's up to you. But you could say, I was married civilly before, but I am married in the Catholic Church to my husband now. And so
okay. That
would be sufficient.
Well, I always tell people I brought my husband back to the church because he had, you know, left before I had met him. So I brought him back to the church, but I always say he brought me to God. And it was because we were meant to meet, because we brought each other, you know, back
yeah.
to the church.
Yeah.
And come Valentine's Day, and he picked the date.
I've got to press on, Elaine. This sounds like a magnificent story. Maybe you should write a memoir. Sounds like it would be rather compelling. But I've got to press on. Thank you for the call, Elaine. God bless you. Let's go to Kip now in Easton, Pennsylvania. Hi, Kip.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thanks.
I was sent a video by one of my daughters who is no longer practicing Catholic. She is an evangelical. The video is by a former Irish priest who talks about the sacrifice of Jesus at every Mass being against Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, it says in Hebrews, Jesus died once for all,
right.
And he is making the argument that what we are doing, even if it is a bloody sacrifice, it is the sacrifice of Jesus over and over and over again, which goes against Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do my research so I can give her a loving response and try to help direct her the right way. What can you do to help me?
Okay. This is one of those classic misunderstandings of the Catholic Church, and I don't know anything about this ex-priest, but he's either being disingenuous or he's just ignorant. And maybe he skipped the class that day when they taught in the seminary about this issue. So Hebrews 9:24, among other places, says, "For Christ has entered not into a sanctuary made with hands, a copy of the true one, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God on our behalf. Nor was it to offer himself repeatedly, as the high priest enters the holy place yearly with blood not his own. For then he would have had to suffer repeatedly since the foundation of the world. But as it is, he has appeared once for all at the end of the age to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself." And so that would be an indicative example of what it says elsewhere. St. Peter says in 1 Peter 3:18, "For Christ also died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit." And this is a repeated refrain throughout the New Testament, the once-for-all nature of the sacrifice. So the simple answer to this question is, number one, this priest is either intentionally or out of ignorance, he is misstating the Catholic teaching. And the Catholic teaching is simply that this, when you go to Mass, it is the once for all same sacrifice of Christ. It is not a repetition of that sacrifice. It is not a re-sacrifice. It is a representation in time and space of that once for all sacrifice on the cross. Now, I mean, that in itself is sufficient as an answer. And if I were, what I would do is I'd say, this is Catholic teaching. And you can like it or not like it, but at least know what it is, that this is the once for all sacrifice on the cross of Jesus. And it's not as though the Catholic Church says, yeah, I mean, all that stuff in Hebrews, we don't really believe that. Of course the Church believes that, as you know. So I would insist on that point, that this is the same sacrifice once and for all. Now, if it gets deeper than that, I would recommend that you go to Catholic.com and just pull up all the different articles and tracts and other things that get much deeper into biblical, you know, the biblical details on this. But that's really the starting point, is just to say he's misrepresenting the Catholic Church's teaching. That's not what we teach. The Council of Trent said so. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says so. And these are easy to pull out if you want to do so and just show her. And then that really deflates the argument, because his argument is essentially that the Catholic Church thinks that it is re-sacrificing Christ on the cross, and that's simply not true. That's not what the Church teaches. I know I'm being repetitive, but doing that for emphasis. That's how I would approach it, Kip.
Wonderful, Patrick. As always, you're a tremendous help to me and everyone else listening. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, thank you, Kip. Good to hear from you. Well, I'll expand on that just a moment more before we have to take our break. Just remember when Jesus at the Last Supper, remember what he said, everybody. At the Last Supper, he took the bread and he took the chalice of wine. And not only did he say, this is my body and this is my blood that will be poured out for you and for many. And he was talking there, of course, about the actual sacrifice that he made on the cross the following day. So Jesus is both the victim, in other words, the victim that's offered, and the priest that offers himself. So he is victim and priest. And the book of Hebrews emphasizes how Jesus is not only our high priest and offered the perfect once for all sacrifice, but now he intercedes for us eternally before the Father, meaning that this presentation of his sacrifice is eternal, because that is the other half of what priesthood is intended for. So the purpose of priesthood, and in this case, the priesthood of Jesus, is to offer sacrifice. So he made the sacrifice once for all on the cross, and now we're told he is eternally presenting the sacrifice on our behalf before the Father. So this is an ongoing, eternal offering of himself. Now, at the Last Supper, you'll notice that he said to his apostles there, do this. So this that I'm doing right now, saying these words and everything, do this, and when you do this, you do it in memory of me. So the apostles understood, and we know that they understood it this way because their disciples, people like, for example, St. Ignatius of Antioch, who knew St. John the Apostle. He was taught the faith, it seems, from St. John the Apostle, and St. John the Apostle was in the upper room with Jesus. So St. John the Apostle knew what Jesus meant, as did St. Peter. And St. Ignatius of Antioch knew St. Peter as well. So some of these earliest Christians who knew the apostles and received the gospel from them, they got not only the words, but the meaning of the words. So there we see Jesus telling them to do this, and that's what the Mass is. The Mass is the priest doing what Jesus said to do, the offering of the bread and the wine, which is the representation to us in time and space of that once for all sacrifice of Christ on the cross. It's not a repetition. And anyone who tells you that it is, that the Catholic Church thinks that we're repeating the sacrifice, they may say, well, look, it says it's an unbloody sacrifice. Yeah, but it's the same sacrifice. And it's being presented to you and to me in an unbloody manner, as Jesus did at the Last Supper. So just remember that if this should ever come up. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Good music for a Taco Tuesday. Thank you for listening. 888-914-889. I can't even do that. Play that guy again. He's good. He's good. I never learned how to do that. Yes.
Yeah, that's all right.
You are correct, sir. I love that. That should be your ringtone when I call you, Cyrus. Not the other stuff about you were right and I was wrong. Don't play that.
Oh, what?
Have that as your ringtone when I call. But play it again. So everybody, when Cyrus gets a call from me, this is what he will hear on his phone. Cyrus, you were right and I was wrong.
That's what they
Not
hear.
Not that.
That's what you have right now. That's my ringtone for when you
That's
call
That's your ringtone
me.
Now.
Uh-huh.
What are some of the other ones that you had picked off from me for your ringtone? Your self-affirmation.
Cyrus, you didn't do All right, here's one.
Cyrus, you didn't do anything wrong. I rarely say that.
Yep, I got it. The one time you said it.
The one time I said
it. Yeah, and then...
Cyrus, you are the nicest guy. You are hard worker. You're a good guy. You're thoughtful. You are empathetic. You're very funny. You're all that and more, Cyrus. You're fantastic. You're an excellent producer. I don't care what anyone else says. I think you're okay. Thank you, Cyrus. You're a genius.
And that's every nice thing you've ever said about me.
And the taco guys are in the background. I like that. So I really would love to see you in the grocery store frozen food aisle when I call you and your phone starts playing that. People are looking at you like, what?
What? All right. Back to work.
So give me back the new work. Ringtone one more time. Oh, the Taco Tuesday.
You're
going to
make me do that again? These poor yep. people listening. They want their questions answered.
Do it.
Do it.
That's a keeper.
That's pretty good.
That is a keeper. All right. I guess we've run that course. We're done. All right. Thanks a lot, Cyrus. Yep. I appreciate it. Let's go to Peggy in West Bend, Wisconsin. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. Strange question, but when deciding where to get buried, other than going in a sacred ground, what things would we take into consideration? My husband would like to get buried where his parents are buried, which is like 45 minutes away from where mm-hmm. we live. I would like to get buried at our current parish because I think it would be nice for it to be closer for our sons to come and pray, you know, mm-hmm. and come and visit, so mm-hmm. to speak. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
That is a very interesting question, and I can understand from both perspectives, yours and your husband's.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm assuming that for him, it's the sentimental, you know, desire to be buried in the same place where his parents are. Of course, his parents aren't there, and he won't be there. They'll all be in heaven, God willing. But for those who are going to mourn and remember them, it is convenient if you have family members together in one place. So I could completely understand that. At the same time, there is the practicality of this issue, which is that if you want to make it as easy as possible for people to come visit, then a more centrally located cemetery, someplace that's easier to get to, that makes a lot of sense also. So it seems to me that since you and your husband, I'm assuming, want to be buried together in the same place, at least, that you'll have to come to some agreement one way or the other. And, you know, in the big picture, if your kids had to travel an extra 45 minutes, that's very doable. You know, that's not an inordinate sacrifice for anybody to travel a bit longer. Plenty of people have to travel a long distance to get to their parents' gravesites. So a 45-minute extra trip, I don't think, is asking too much. So if you wanted to honor your husband's wishes and be buried with him near where his parents are buried, then that might be a good way to, you know, to accommodate the situation and not put an undue burden on your family.
Okay.
Yeah, just fair a enough. Thought.
Okay.
Let me tell you something, Peggy. I was in Appleton, Wisconsin. Where is West Bend in relation to Appleton? Is it near?
About an hour south of there.
All right. Well, I don't know if you ever get to Appleton. I don't get there very often. But I was on my way to go speak at a big event on, I think it was about a week ago. And I had, as I was driving by, I saw out of my left window this beautiful, I mean, absolutely beautiful cemetery. And I'm a connoisseur of cemeteries. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a ghoul. But I enjoy long walks in old cemeteries. I love praying the rosary, walking through an old cemetery. And the more deserted, the better, because I like my privacy. But this cemetery is, I think it's called Riverside Cemetery. And it adjoins the St. Joseph Cemetery, which is the Catholic cemetery, just on the other side of this big gate. If you ever find yourself in Appleton, Wisconsin, look for this cemetery. It is beautiful. And it is very shady. Oh, my gosh. This is one of the most beautiful cemeteries I've ever seen. Now, the reason I think it's so beautiful is because of the trees. It's got a lot of trees. Normally, cemeteries tend to have either some trees or maybe few trees. But this is a very, it's almost like going into a forest.
Wow.
And I diverted because I had some extra time. So I stopped going to the venue and I had some time. So I just drove slowly through the cemetery and really enjoyed it. So check it out.
I will do that.
I'm not known for giving cemetery advice, but here we go.
Go figure.
That's right. Well, thank you, Peggy. I appreciate it. And all of you denizens of Appleton, Wisconsin, if you haven't visited that cemetery, I think you'll find it impressive. Let's go to Katie now, listening in Montana. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I was listening earlier to the lady talking about marriage and divorce, and my husband and I have been married for 14 years. We have three beautiful children, and... Okay. We are not Catholic. We are Protestant, but I listen to Relevant every day. My, about half my family is Catholic. I've been pursuing the Catholic faith for years now, and I would take RCIA yesterday, but my husband is not supportive at all. Okay. And he is just in a nutshell, very verbally and emotionally abusive towards myself and my children, and has been our whole marriage. And I have been for 14 years trying so hard. Like, we've tried counseling, we've gone on marriage retreats, we've gone to people in the Protestant church. Nothing has changed. And I've even started praying to Mary and saying the rosary and different things that I can do at home. And miraculously, somehow he allowed our children to go to Catholic school this year for the first time ever. So our kids are in a school called Divine Mercy. I'm not even kidding you. It's a miracle, because he's very anti-Catholic church, but it somehow he allowed that to happen. But my question is, as a non-Catholic, I've been baptized in the Methodist church, but not in the Catholic church, obviously. I'm at a crossroads where I'm not sure what to do with my marriage. I don't know if I should pursue a legal separation, or I'm not for divorce. There's no physical violence in our marriage, but it is very toxic and even our children are very affected by it. And I just don't know what the Catholic Church would advise me as a non-Catholic who wants to be a Catholic. What would you advise me to do?
Yeah, this is a difficult situation, and you don't need me to tell you that. I'm sure that, you know, it's got to be very hard on you. I'll just offer an opinion, first of all, and that is that any man who verbally abuses his wife, it is akin to physical abuse. It's the verbal equivalent of hitting her. If he's using four-letter words, if he's calling you, you know, I can only imagine what he's calling you, but I probably could imagine.
Yeah.
That is yeah. the equivalent of smacking you in the face or punching you or knocking you down. And it's just horrendous. And it's wrong and it shouldn't happen. And you shouldn't have to go through that. So wow, word to the wise, you. Guys. Oh, you're welcome. I just want to say this word to all the men out there. Don't curse at your wife. Don't swear at your wife. Don't call her any other words that are unkind, etc. Be polite to your wife, even if you're angry, especially when you're angry, because it's the equivalent of hitting her. And people go to jail for that, and they should go to jail for that. So in your case, Katie, first of all, I'm sorry that you're going through this. I truly am sorry.
And thank you.
I wish there was something I could say that would make it better. I know I can't, but yeah, you have my absolute...
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. You have my absolute support and encouragement. So what do you do at this point? It seems to me, I'm not like a marriage counselor, so I can't give you bona fide marriage counseling advice. I'm not a therapist.
Right.
So I can just give you sort of like general ideas. One would be on the faith front, continue quietly moving in the direction of the Catholic faith. You don't have to have his permission to do this, especially if essentially, it sounds like he's forfeited his role in a certain sense as the spiritual leader, the spiritual head of the household, because he's attacking his wife verbally. So that doesn't, entitle him to, on the one hand, attack you verbally, and on the other hand, tell you what you can and can't do. Not that he should do that in any case. So I would say just keep proceeding in this direction. Keep listening to Relevant Radio. I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. I would encourage you to maybe see if you can change his mind about the Catholic Church, maybe get him a copy of that book I talk about every so often called Surprised by Truth. It is a compendium
I've
of
tried.
Conversion testimonies. Oh, have you tried that?
Yeah, we met. So he and I met at a Bible college down in Florida, not a Catholic school, but we're both theology nerds. And so that's actually what drew me to the Catholic Church is reading the church fathers, the first church fathers.
Yes.
I don't know how any Protestant can read the early church fathers and stay a Protestant. Just a little shout out there to the early, Irenaeus and all those wonderful people. But he's not open at all. And he went through all of that. He studied pastoral theology and Koine Greek for years. And so he's very intellectual, but very, very stuck on, it's like he has the head knowledge of Protestant theology, but dare I say, no relationship with
right.
Christ. That's
right.
What it seems like anyway. I can't say that for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking at the clock and I'm really regretting the fact that we only have about a minute left for this phone call and you need much more than that. So if you haven't had a chance yet to maybe get some personal counseling, I don't know if you've tried that or not, but maybe you can get in touch.
I have for years.
Have you? Okay. All right. Have you read that book yet? It's called Surprised by Truth.
No, I haven't read that one.
Okay. So let me leave you with that thought. And if you could call me back another time, I'd love to talk about this with you further. I feel frustrated that we haven't been able to get to some of the other points. But that book, it's called Surprised by Truth, and it was published in 1994, has a red cover. And the stories are about men and women who became Catholic, and many of them were like your husband is now. They were adamantly opposed to the Catholic Church. So if you could get him to read that, you know, that might be a big first step. But I would lay down the law, Katie, and tell him, stop swearing at me, stop cursing at me, or there will be consequences. You have every right to do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I love your show. I'm so grateful
Thanks,
for you guys.
Katie. Chin up. And call me back if I can be of further help to you. I appreciate it. We'll pray for you. I'll be right back.